Hello, world, and welcome to the Flyover Startups podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Poehler. Each episode, we talk to founders who are building their businesses outside of Silicon Valley in the so-called flyover states. Today, we talk with Jonathan Longnecker of the web agency 47 Media, based in Knoxville, Tennessee. In addition to 47 Media, he also runs the Kick Awesome Show, Kicktastic, a video training site to help small businesses, and Last Night Ago. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Great. So let's get started, I guess, just where you're about your background. Where did you grow up? Was it in Knoxville, Tennessee?
Yeah, man, I'm born and bred here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Haven't ever moved out of the state or the city. So
nice. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. So
not too far away.
Not too far.
My wife is from Indiana, so we drive through there quite a bit. Headed up there to see her folks.
Nice. So in Knoxville, I mean, at what age did you start creating art? When did you, you're also a musician. When did you kind of know that art and music was something that, you know, you were passionate about?
Yeah. You know, I think I started drawing probably in middle school. And I think I started playing guitar in middle school as well. But it was one of those things where, you know, I took guitar lessons for a couple of years. And then I got in high school and I was like, oh, this isn't that cool anymore. And I stopped doing it. Mostly because it was just like your basic guitar lessons, yeah. Right? You go in, you learn to read music, you learn to play other people's stuff. And yeah. And I was playing for the basketball team, and I don't know, like, I think when you hit high school, sort of your priorities get screwed with. And so I was like, oh, well, that's not that cool anymore or whatever. But actually the second year of high school, I met my partner, my business partner, Nate Croft. He was going to the same high school. And they had started a worship band for the high school there. It was a private Christian school. And he was totally like rocking it out on the guitar. And I was like, dang, man, I used to be able to play guitar. So I pulled out the old acoustic. He had the electric, so he was way cooler than me. I was like, well, you know, I used to play guitar. So I kind of got it back out. And I don't know, that we just kind of became friends. He drew as well. And so we kind of connected there, and we started writing music together. And I think that's where I kind of found my passion for creating again, was not just playing other people's stuff, but actually, like, you know, making my own stuff. Mm-hmm. Those 2 years, I was only at that high school for 2 years, didn't learn anything scholastically. It was not a very good school at all. But formed, you know, some obviously very important friendships and just sort of a culture of creating, of drawing and making music and sort of forging our own paths, I guess. That's where that started. So I guess I learned better lessons there than school things, which was good.
I think that's true with a lot, sometimes with a lot of people, you know, you school and college is a place where you end up meeting, you know, someone that, you know, you'll form a really great friendship that'll just change the mm-hmm. course of your entire life.
Yeah. And actually, you know, another guy that we do a lot of work with was in middle school when we were in high school at that same school. And he's done a lot of work for us, and he's gone on to start his own web shop now. His name's Troy McNeil. And so it's just funny, like, we still hang out with him, and there's another guy that we went to school together with. And it's just funny that, like, those are the guys that I still hang out with most of the time, even though it was, I don't even know how many years ago now. It was a long time ago. But yeah, it's funny, those connections you make that kind of stay with you.
When did you get into web design? You know, you met Nate in high school, and you were there for 2 years, then left. You know, where did you go next?
Well, I went to a public school. So I was at the private school for my first 2 years of high school. and my parents realized I wasn't learning anything at school. So they, they're like, okay, it's time to do something else. So I went to public school for the last 2 years of high school. And then I jumped over to a state school, like a 2-year school, and got a degree in graphic design, because by that point, Nate and I had started several bands, but we were basically perpetually in a band together. And sort of, I guess amassed, these other things, like, we started making our own logos and designing our own t-shirts and even built a few websites. I'm pretty sure we, grabbed a cracked copy of Photoshop off of some Whereas site, back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Because we didn't have money to buy it, right? So,
so I'm familiar with that.
Yeah. And so I guess we saw these sort of intersections of art and technology crossing. And really we wanted to make music. But the band kind of broke up like right as I was getting ready to go to college. And so, graphic design just seemed like a really good fit for me. Because I like computers and I liked art. And I didn't really realize that I liked design at the time, but that was sort of the main thing. I was like, I kind of like this. And I think I took the first class and I really didn't like it, but I ended up taking another class that I did. Like I sort of figured out what it was about. The first class, I think it was just the teacher kind of turned me off, but, yeah, so I stuck with that, and, I was actually a year ahead of Nate. And so he ended up doing the same degree at the same place. And then I actually got a job at that school right when I graduated.
Oh, wow.
They saw my portfolio thing at the end of the year, and they're like, hey, you want to come work for us? And I was like, sure.
You want to start earning back some of the tuition?
Right. Yeah. So I did that for, I think it was maybe 6 months or a year. And was still working at my restaurant job. I worked at Chick-fil-A for like 6 years. Was doing that on the weekends and was just working a crazy amount. And one of the guys that had worked in the spot that I was at the school called them one day and was like, hey, does anybody need a job? And I was like, yeah, sure. And basically the company that he worked at, he was leaving in 2 weeks. And he needed to find a replacement. And so basically I went in and they talked to me for like an hour and they're like, okay, so when can you come in and learn this stuff so that you can take over for him in 2 weeks? And it just totally like threw me right into the fire.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like it was a really great opportunity. I was very blessed. I mean, to have a full-time job, as sort of the lead designer, I mean, technically the only designer at the time, but, to have sort of run over the creative part of a business that soon out of school was pretty awesome. And so I did that for about 4 years, and Nate worked with us for a while, and then he went off to California, and we worked with several other people. And I learned, I learned so much during that time.
Because not only were you a professional designer, you were leading a design team.
Well, yeah, there was this, one or two people under me at any given time. But more than that, like I had to learn to deal with people. There was a situation where one of the owners of the company got really sick. And so I ended up having to go on sales calls and like talking in person directly with clients and stuff like that. And so that was really good to get that experience and learn how to deal with people and how to form those relationships. But at the same time, there were a lot of things going on in the company, just from like a business side that I knew weren't good. And so that was sort of, I guess, the foundation of maybe I should do this myself.
Yes.
Well, and also, I mean, there's definitely a ceiling of what I was going to get paid at this place because I was already the head of the quote unquote design department. And other than like become a partner, you know, I'm like, I don't want to become a partner at this place. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to go make my own thing. There, you know, my wife and I were having our first kid, and, you know, I just told them, I was like, look, I got to make this much money or I got to go do something else. Uh-huh. And they were like, well, we can't pay you that much. And they were not paying me much at the time. It was just, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't like they were trying to screw me. It's just where they were at the time. So, So I got another job at an advertising agency, and it was Nate and I had actually started 47 Media during this time.
So you were both working part time on 47 Media.
Yeah, just nights and weekends. Okay. Yeah, and that was hard because that was one of those moments where it's like, should I go ahead and just jump into this full time now, or should I let it, you know, gain some steam and some momentum? And because we were having our first kid, you know, I kind of felt like I should probably let it become a little more established. And so I think we did 47 for about 2 years part time, before we went full time with it. So we were maybe a little overcautious. but it worked out. You know, we saved up a good chunk of money and just kind of waited, you know, for the right time,
which full time.
Yeah, which we learned is never really the right time.
Right.
You know, as soon as we jumped full time, we had a bunch of money saved up and we had to spend it for some stuff, and we ended up with like two nonprofit jobs that didn't pay us anything, and like we had tons of work, and like it all dried up, of course, you know, right as we went full time. So
sure.
It's one of those things that, you know, it's good to prepare, but you never really, really know, you know, what's going to happen. So
no, you don't. So at the beginning, you and Nate were on the same page of at least you had a plan to go full time at a certain point, or was that just kind of an evolving conversation?
No, I think we always, we always wanted it to be our thing, to do that full time. But neither of us, had ever done our own thing. And I don't think either of our families really had a lot of that going on. So there didn't have a lot of good, examples of like how to make that work. So that's why we were really cautious about just saving up as much as we could and like making sure that we had, you know, work coming in and that we were building the brand. And it was getting pretty ridiculous when we went full time because we had so much work going on. And thankfully the place that I worked at was really great, and they let me go down to like 4 days a week and then down to 3 days a week and then kind of phase out. And it was good for them too, because I was the head designer there as well. And so that gave them time, a little more time to find somebody to fill the spot. But still, I mean, that's, you don't hear about that kind of stuff happening very often.
No, you don't. Were you nervous sort of when you first approached them and said, hey, look, you know, I'm moonlighting on the side.
Well,
and the other shoe drops, you know, it's getting so busy, I need to cut back hours here.
Well, you know, it's funny because, when I started that job, I mean, I went in completely honest with them and told them what was going on. You know, I said, mm-hmm. look, I've got this on the side. I've got this going on. And, you know, first of all, I want to make sure that whatever I'm working on, you know, is not going to overlap anything you're working on. You know, like if I get something that's too close to an industry, like I'm going to talk to you about it first. And that, you know, a year or two, it's a very real possibility that I could be moving on. And so they knew that. So the fact that they hired me to begin with was pretty amazing, but, it worked out really well. So
cool. In the early years of 47 Media, what were some of the early challenges, you know, especially in, you know, growing a brand, figuring out what that brand is, and, you know, attracting customers around that brand? How long did it take you guys to sort of figure it out?
It was funny. We, you know, the first couple of sites that we had were pretty weird. Just like crazy artwork and and we actually a part of what we wanted to do when we started was record albums for bands as well, because we had recording equipment from, you know, when we were in a band and we liked producing and stuff like that. So, you know, our first website had, you know, music that we had recorded for people on there. I'm pretty sure it was Flash and had all sorts of goofy animations and stuff like that. And actually the majority of the stuff initially was print design. It wasn't even web stuff. Because we weren't doing a lot of that. But we eventually got into that. I remember working at the ad agency, and when they hired me, they were like, well, you know, you do web stuff, right? And I was like, yeah. And I didn't realize what the previous guy had actually been doing. He was doing like PHP and CSS. Oh, and wow. Like, that wasn't, I mean, this was 8-9 years ago. So it was, that stuff wasn't really mainstream yet. I mean, PHP was obviously, but like the whole CSS thing was just sort of coming into its own.
Yeah.
At that point, and it was really cool. Like, it really interested me. And so I actually spent a lot of time at that job learning CSS to do websites for their clients. And that sort of fueled us switching over to doing more websites, because I realized really quickly, sort of, I don't know, I guess I just sort of saw that this was where things were going.
Yeah.
And that CSS really gave a lot of flexibility you know, to the layouts and like what we wanted to do. And Nate and I both knew how to design, and being able to actually translate that stuff into CSS was pretty exciting. Yeah. Cause even our own site was Flash, right? Cause that was how you could make it look exactly the way you wanted it to look.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I started showing Nate this, and I was like, okay, you got to learn that, like, we got to do this. And that's when we started selling much larger jobs, and we're like, okay, this is what we need to do. Like, the money is not in the print stuff. We got to do the web stuff. Yeah. And looping back to your original question about the brand. So we started out with kind of the crazy brand, but then at some point we actually pulled way back and we went way more corporate with it, because we were doing work for sort of larger companies. And I think we started to freak out, because we're like, okay, we're just two dudes like working out in Nate's parents' basement. And like, if we're working for big companies, like, we need to kind of look more professional. And we had that for a while, and then we finally just got over it. And we were like, okay, we need, and I don't know if work was slowing down. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think maybe we just weren't getting the kind of work that we wanted. And so sort of the honeymoon was wearing off of the business, I guess. It's like, okay, if we're going to do this full time, like, we need to have a brand and the kind of work that we want that we're proud of. And, right. And so that's sort of when we rebranded 47 Media and gave it a lot of the personality that it's got now. The way that we wrote the copy, the way that we designed it. At the time, I think it was kind of grungy, and so that was real popular. And I don't know, it got picked up by a ton of CSS galleries, and that sort of really propelled us into having like a very noticeable brand online, whereas before it was just kind of this thing
stock that you'd
forget about it. You know, it was, yeah, like, I mean, the work was good, but the layout and the way it was set up, and we started writing, you know, we added a blog and we started writing a lot of articles, and I don't know. I think that was a real turning point for us when we actually just decided to be ourselves. And I think, you know, if you go to 47media.com and you read through the sort of about us section or the don't hire us section, like, you sort of get the even just being average pisses us off. So, so that's sort of, I don't know. That's how we got there, I guess. That was a really big turning point for us, was creating that brand. And we didn't even realize it at the time, but that definitely began to create a long-term brand, you know, and people that follow us, and and stuff like that. Like, we didn't even realize it at the time, but that's what we were doing. We were laying the groundwork for that.
And it was really just a product of, you know, you were like, well, if we're going to do this every day as a job, like, we have to make it fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's got to be fun. If we're going to take the risk to do this ourselves and not get a steady paycheck from somebody else.
Right. You know. What was the support like from your families while you were going through this process? Did they kind of understand where you were going, and was there any sort of conflicts, I guess?
I don't think so. They were very supportive of it. Like I said, I think, obviously if I have that stuff built into me, it came from somewhere. And so, whether or not it had actually been put into action in the past doesn't mean that they didn't understand.
I see.
And so, yeah, I mean, they were super supportive and, obviously, you know, warned us to be cautious, you know, and to take our time and do it right.
Right.
Which is good. But yeah, I don't ever remember any sort of, you know, issues or like conversations, you know, where somebody was saying you shouldn't do this. I mean, there was never anything like that. They were all very supportive.
Good. You point to video as, you guys have brought up video in the past as something that was kind of the turning point in your business. So before you were doing blogs, you were, you know, writing from a unique voice. But then something happened with video when you created the Kick Awesome show. How did video unlock new opportunities for you?
Yeah, so I think we had done a few random video things before that, mostly to announce other projects that we were working on. And we noticed that they got a lot of attention. And so we had kind of gotten to the point with the blog where we were really busy with client work and we just weren't post, you know, we didn't have time to write blogs. But we knew that we needed to be. And I don't know. I think it was just one of those like, hey, let's do something every week to put on the blog. And why not have it be video? Because video seemed to get more traction than just, you know, the words.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that we made up the name of the show on the first episode. Like, it was super informal. I think we were in Nate's backyard on his porch. And, like, we didn't even know what we were doing. We just knew that we were going to try this. And I don't know. We found out that we had this sort of weird chemistry on the screen. And it was just something that we randomly found, like once we started making videos, like we didn't know, we had never done anything like that before. And, you know, it was pretty funny. And so we were like, oh, this might work. And so, you know, we did a few episodes of the Kick Awesome show and people really, really seemed to like it. So we ran with that and we just decided to pull it out of the blog and go make it its own thing. So we, you know, built its own site and sort of relaunched it as a separate identity, I guess, if you will. And so that was fun. I mean, we did that for years and it brought around all sorts of interesting opportunities. Obviously it birthed Kicktastic, the business video training.
Mm-hmm.
But we, I guess, you know, it was one of those things where we thought it was going to bring us like a ton of business.
Yeah.
It's like, man, millions of people are going to watch our little web video show and then we're going to get tons of work. And that never happened. Never happened. But what did happen is we found out that it actually helped us close jobs. So we continued and we still put the show on the 47 Media blog as well. And so what would happen is potential clients would come and fill out the contact form and then they'd poke around the site and they would find, you know, inevitably find a video of the Kick Awesome show. And they'd watch a couple and then they would actually specifically mention that, like when they were when we were talking to them throughout the, you know, the process, and several people, you know, mentioned that the Kick Awesome show was a reason that they wanted to work with us, just because they like, you know, like hindsight's always 20/20, right? So I think we finally realized that what was going on was that people saw us, right? Mm-hmm. They saw our faces, they saw our personalities, and they got to feel like they knew us. And there's so many web shops out there that they almost hide who they are.
Yes.
You know, they try to come across bigger than they are, I guess. And people are just looking for a connection. I mean, it doesn't matter how big the purchase is. There's always an emotional component built into that purchase. And so if you feel comfortable enough, if you feel like you know somebody, you're a lot more willing to spend that money with them than, you know, some faceless web design shop out there.
Right.
And again, this was not part of our master plan. We just, you know, we just kind of backed our way into it, and we thought it was really, really interesting. But it actually turns out that it did get us some work. About 2 years after we started the show, we got a call from the director of the jQuery Foundation. And I think he had run across some photography that Nate had done and ended up at the Kick Awesome Show site and like watched all, like every single episode.
Holy cow.
Like he had like a binge session and just watched them all and called me the next day. Like he had found it on the weekend and he called me that Monday. And he's like, "Hey, this is so-and-so from jQuery." I'm like, "Hey, what's up?" He's like, "Man, I've just watched all of your Kick Awesome shows, and we're doing this thing where, like, the members of the jQuery team are getting together to work on jQuery, and, like, you guys have to be there."
Holy cow.
I was like, "Okay, what do you want us to do?" He's like, "I don't care. You can come entertain us. You can do – like, I don't care. You just have to be there." He was like, "We'll fly you out here. We'll feed you." I was like, "Done. We'll be there. You know, we're on the plane." So we actually ended up doing
you booked a corporate like comedy gig almost.
Thankfully, we didn't actually have to do that. We ended up helping them with design, and actually ended up turning into a pretty long project, helping them redesign some of the jQuery sites and stuff that. So it was kind of cool.
So, I mean, I'm on the jQuery site all the time. So, I mean, some of the designs, I'm sure I've run into your guys' work.
Yeah, probably. The frame stuff was already done when they brought us on board, but we did a lot of the sort of internal designs, like the content designs, and set up almost like bootstrap type style sheets, you know, for how they would be used for most of the sites, and set up a framework, you know, for calling different classes and columns and content types and things like that. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, you never know, right? You never know. Yeah.
Well, I think what the videos do really well and is, you know, business is all about relationships. I mean, it's people with dealing with other people. You know, so that's when they see the humanity, you're just not a contact form on some website that they're filling out and they're getting you know, a request for quote.
Right. And it's all about being remembered, because, you know, the internet gives us a great opportunity to get our stuff to anybody in the world, but that also means that anybody else can do that too. And so there's a lot more noise for people to filter through. So if they're trying to find a web shop to design their new site, you have to do something so that they remember you. Or I mean, if they're talking to 10 different firms, they're not even going to be able to keep it straight. I mean, I wouldn't, you know? So that's part of it too, is just being interesting enough to be remembered.
Right. Does it ever feel overwhelming at times to create all of this content for free and give it away?
Yes. Quite a bit. you know, the Kick Awesome show, it started out really great. We were doing it like every week. And
wow.
Yeah, and then And then Nate actually got really sick because he was doing the editing, and he was putting so much time into it that he actually got really sick and was in the hospital and had all sorts of stuff going on. If you watch episode 5, he's on painkillers from that, and it's actually really funny. But
but yeah,
there was
a toll.
Yeah, obviously that wasn't going to work long term, and so you know we. That's the hardest thing about content, man, is keeping it consistent. And it's something that we've never been really good at. We'll do good for a while and then we'll kind of drop off. You know, I think we had a year that we took off from the Kick Awesome show because we were doing the business video training for Kicktastic, and like, we just did not have time for it. And then we did another one back in the spring, and then we were going to do more, but we've had a bunch of other stuff going on. And so we actually just shot another one this past week. We're going to try to at least finish up the year and try to get through and, you know, have a few more in there. But it's when you have so many things going on, you're right there. You have to make decisions, you know, about what is important. And I don't know if you've seen on the blog, but we're trying to go through a simplification process at 47 Media right now, simplifying just everything, you know, just taking a hard look at our processes and all the stuff that we make and all the things that we do, and just really questioning, you know, do we need to be doing this? Like, should we actually be spending time on this, or should somebody else be doing it for us, or should we just drop it? Or so we're taking a look at all the stuff that we're doing right now and trying to make those decisions, because you can't say yes to new things if you don't say no to something else.
Right.
So trying to figure that out. We're definitely in transition mode at the moment, just talking and thinking about that. But
I think that's a struggle with a lot of business owners. I know I struggle with, you know, I have 5 different things that, you know, I want to work on and I want to do, and just choosing all of them. It's like, I love you all so much, but I can only work on one of you at a time.
Yeah. And, you know, that played a big factor into why we ended up making the Kicktastic thing free.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. You know, Kicktastic, your video training series, which is excellent, by the way. I watched quite a few this morning. I need to restart them so I can actually fill out the worksheets and and do the homework along the way.
Nice.
But just the videos that I watched were just incredible. So, I mean, you started off wanting to build this into a business, right? To actually sell these training video products.
Yeah, we did.
But you transitioned out and turned it into a really interesting platform for Charity Water. What inspired you and Nate to turn away from that original for-profit plan and work essentially as a nonprofit?
Well, so like I said, the part of it was the content schedule. I think we kind of backed ourselves into a corner in terms of how often we were putting out stuff. So between Nate and I, and then Austin, we brought in another guy to partner with us for Kicktastic. We were doing a blog post a week, a 2 to 3 minute video tip a week, and then an interview a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's a lot of content.
especially if you still have to run a consulting business on the side too.
Yeah. And so it was, I mean, I have to say, like, I'm impressed that we did it for as long as we did, because the logistics of it are pretty crazy. I mean, we learned a lot about how we manage our time. We learned a lot about pre-scheduling content. Like, a lot of times for a blog post, you know, you'll just kind of come in and like write a blog post, but for this, it's like we had to get together and plot out the next 2 or 3 months worth of content so that we could be efficient in that week in doing what we knew we needed to do, rather than spend several hours trying to figure out what to do. So that was really interesting. But I don't know, I think it was one of those things where I think we made a lot of mistakes in the way that we we built it and we marketed it, it probably would have been better as a single product rather than a membership program.
Right.
And that was actually the initial intent. But anyway, we started looking at it and we realized that we were afraid that the quality of the content was starting to suffer from the schedule. And it's funny because we also noticed that when the money was involved, it changed the way the content got made. It changed the content itself. Obviously, it made us do it faster. And so we were starting to see, you know, corners being cut. And it's not that we weren't proud of what we were doing, but it wasn't like, dude, this is awesome kind of stuff. It, like the Kick Awesome show. I don't know. It was just a different thing. It was becoming more about the obligation rather than the joy of it. Exactly. And
so that affected your decision because, I mean, I don't know if you guys had discussed like taking and maybe funding or, you know, at least, you know, acquiring some maybe like loans or resources up front to help you manage the just the production of it. But
yeah. Now we talked to at least one company about that actually before we launched it. But I don't think any of us, we're not like funding type guys. So I don't think that we ever really wanted to go down that road. And the more we talked about it, the more we realized that what we actually liked, what we figured out that we liked the most was actually helping people. And so I don't know, at some point we just kind of shifted gears and we said, okay, if we like helping people, how can we help people with this rather than try to make money off of it?
Yeah.
And we were actually at Chris Guillebeau's World Domination Summit. And I remember we were not in the main area, but we were really like in another building and we just kind of sat down and like we'd been meaning to talk about it for a while because we all kind of knew that we were going to be changing something pretty drastically. We just didn't really know what to do with it. And actually Chris Guillebeau was doing some stuff with Charity Water. And so we're like, okay, let's just do that. Like, let's make it free. let's help people, you know, run their businesses better so that they in turn can help other people, whether monetarily or with their time or with more business advice. 'Cause you know, I mean, we live in America and we're super blessed and we have way more than we need. And we could try to go get more and more and more money. But I think what we realize is that we have plenty and I don't know, it's an endless game if your life becomes about making more money. And so we just decided to flip gears and to give it away. And we set up a thing so people can donate. So if they donate, I think we do like 70 or 75% that we give to Charity Water and we keep the rest just to kind of keep up hosting and our Vimeo Pro account, you know, and just the sort of technical, you know, expenses that come along with it. And we've always, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to ask, how has that been successful? Customers, have they donated significantly to Charity Water? Has it sort of worked out?
No, I mean, there hasn't been a ton of donations. I think it's one of those things that when stuff is free, it's free. And so, you know, we're not giving it with an expectation of return. We're giving it to give it. So we've definitely had some people donate, which has been awesome. But it's definitely not a deluge of incoming revenue or anything like that.
Okay. Let's transition to Last Night Ago, which is a site that you run with your wife.
Yeah.
And your family. This is kind of a resurgence of the family business.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you describe what Last Night Ago is to our listeners and what it's trying to accomplish?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I got to tell you the story behind the name. My son Jet, when he was little, instead of yesterday, he would say last night ago. And so he would say, you remember, you know, we went to the pumpkin patch last night ago? And we thought it was like the cutest thing ever.
And how many children are in your family?
We have four right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So he's number two. So he named the business. and
naming rights, Dad.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to tell him that. It's our secret. I think at some point, like, my wife is super creative, right? And so she, mm-hmm. She does photography, and she bakes and cooks, and she does a lot of hand painted wooden signs and things like that. She started building furniture recently.
Oh,
wow. So she does way more stuff than I do. But we both love making things, and so we started talking a while ago. We're like, you know, we need to, like, let's make something together. Let's do something together. And I was like, I'm really tired of making stuff on the computer. I want to make something with my hands. And so that was kind of the basis for it. And we talked a lot about different things that we could do. And so we finally just settled on, for now, apparel, although we're kind of labeling it as fine goods too, because it could easily expand into other things. But more of like a lifestyle brand. We're huge fans of like Ugg Monk. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
No.
He's got a super cool brand. He does a lot of t-shirts, but it's also sort of expanded into all sorts of things, like, you know, mouse pads and coasters and even some furniture and decorative items and stuff like that. So it may go there at some point, but for now it's mostly just shirts. And so part of what we wanted to do was we wanted to try to hand design as much of that stuff as possible, rather than just, you know, throw a font into the computer and spit it out. So we're trying to design stuff by hand. And I think we're actually going to be hand stamping everything. Our first shirts were screen printed. But we kind of figured out after we did that run that we can carve our own rubber stamps and actually stamp the shirts ourselves.
Wow.
Which is super cool. And it's actually it's a little easier. Like, if you're not doing huge runs of stuff, it's easier to do that. And that way you don't have to buy a bunch of shirts and send them off to a printer and then wait for them to come back. And it sort of simplifies the inventory a little bit. And it's just, it's a lot cooler looking too, because it's not perfect, you know? It's a little bit transparent. It's just got this really handmade feel to it. So that's where we're going next with stuff. I think the stuff we got now is screen printed, but that'll be the next line of stuff that we're doing for sure. Besides it being handmade, I guess sort of the bigger idea behind it is that, we really want our shirts to say things that are important. And so, you know, like the stuff we have now is, give what you've been given. We've got some
Father the Fatherless.
Yeah. We've got some adoption stuff, Father the Fatherless and Mother the Motherless. We've got another shirt on there right now that we're kind of doing for a friend. One of Ashley's friends, has cancer. And so we're doing a run of shirts to help raise money for her. And it says, you've got this on it. And it's something that she tells herself every morning, because as she's going through this process. And, those are sort of the things, I guess, that we're trying to do. We're trying to make shirts that make a difference. That's not to say we won't have some fun ones in there too, because I think there's a place for both of those things. But for now, that's sort of what we got, and it's really new. Like, we've only had it up, I don't know, a couple of months. Like, we're just trying to get it off the ground. So there's no telling where it'll go, but that's sort of the big picture idea behind it right now.
Are your children kind of excited? Do you bring them into the process? Do they help you make the shirts, and or you know, help out in any way?
Yeah. So right now when we package stuff, our kids do little hand-drawn notes that go in the packaging. and our daughter, our oldest daughter, she makes little bracelets. She like threads them together. And so we usually throw a little bracelet in there with it too. So they get That's to help awesome. Package it and see, you know, that they're part of it. And at some point in the very near future, they will definitely be designing some shirts too. So we're working on that.
Do you consider yourself kind of an entrepreneur who works best, I guess, when there's a cause or something greater than themselves at play than just profits?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think if you would have asked me like 2 years ago, I would have answered very differently, because I think we were right in the middle of really growing 47 Media. And I think what's happened in the past couple of years is that we've kind of gotten to a point where the business is solid, and you know, we get paid plenty of money. And so, you know, I think you've probably heard that saying, like once money is not an issue anymore, then it frees your mind up to focus on more important things. And I think that's kind of what has happened, is once you're not like, oh gosh, how am I going to, you know, pay for my Happy Meal today? You start to think, okay, there's more to this than just making a few bucks, right? There's a lot of people in the world that need help. You know, I was doing some research the other day, and if you make like $50,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of income earners in the whole world, which is nuts. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. And, you know, and most people in the web industry, you know, at least make that much. Like, that's not a whole lot of money for somebody who's making websites. And that was kind of a real gut check for me, I guess, because, you know, a lot of times we're in America and, you know, and we only make $50,000, and we complain and we whine, you know, and we say, oh gosh, you know, life is terrible, the government's trying to screw me, blah, 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 whatever. You know, and it's like, well, yes, but at the same time, you're in the top 1%.
Yeah.
So shut up and stop whining. And this is for me, and I'm not like yelling at people, but like that's kind of what I guess what I've realized in the past couple of years is that we're so fortunate to do what we do and be able to do it wherever we want and to make a really good living doing that. And so I want to make sure that that's not the only thing that I do.
Yeah.
In answer to your question, I would say as of the past year or so, absolutely. Yeah. Those are the things that get me excited. You know, having a great brand and building cool websites is fun. And it's great. And it got me up in the morning for a lot of days, but I think I've kind of moved past that, and I get more excited about ways that I can help people who really, really need it. Rather than, you know, the new hottest CSS
right
compiler or, you know, whatever's going on.
Incrementing your bill rate just a few more percent.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, it sounds like your definition of success, I guess, has changed from when you started on this journey and where you're at now. And it may even change in the future. But
oh yeah,
do you consider yourself successful at this stage?
Oh man, I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of scratching and clawing and trying to figure out what the heck is going on at this point with Kicktastic and with Last Night Ago and even, you know, 47 Media, not so much there, but more in these other sort of newer cause-based ventures. Have no idea what I'm doing. No idea at all. And so it's really interesting, but it's really exciting at the same time. I don't know, man. I don't know I don't know what defines success. I don't think it's defined by business personally. I think it's more what happens at home and personally, you know, with your family and your wife and your kids and your friends and stuff like that. I think that's more what success looks like than a business that you've built or whatever.
One last question before I let you go. Are there any new projects or announcements you'd like to make? Anything you're really excited about?
You know, there's nothing new other than, you know, the thing that my wife and I are doing last night ago is probably the newest thing that I personally have going on. As far as Kicktastic and 47, like I said, we're kind of in transition mode with those, trying to figure out what their next steps are, you know, what the next project is for 47 Media, you know, what our content schedule looks like for Kicktastic and for the Kick Awesome show. It's been a pretty crazy summer. We've been traveling quite a bit, and so we just haven't had the time to kind of sit down and figure that out, I guess. So yeah, not a lot new there other than last night ago.
Great. All right. Well, wherever you guys decide to go, I know I'll be watching and waiting and very excited.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Well, that does it for this episode of the Flyover Stars podcast. Special thanks to Jonathan Longnecker. For more about Jonathan and 47 Media, you can go to 47media.com, all spelled out. Also, check out lastnightago.com. Rate and review us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at FlyoverFM. If you or someone you know runs a startup in a flyover state, email us at contact@flyover.fm. I'm your host, Patrick Poehler. Thanks for listening. Sometimes my reckless ways shock my soul's just before.